The Spectator's podcast now have a newsletter. Sign up for free at spectator.co.uk/podcast-highlights to get The Spectator's podcast highlights in your inbox every Monday.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. So we've been told the new normal involves lots of local lockdowns, or as Boris Johnson likes to put it, the whack-a-mole strategy. James, today we've heard from over the weekend from Matt Hancock that there are about 100 outbreaks, you know, a week that the government is looking at. That sounds quite high, but what is he referring to when he talks about an outbreak?
So the editor of the Health Service Journal says that the NHSF definition of an outbreak is one person in the community passing on the virus to somebody else. So it's not quite as alarming as it sounds. I think the big question is whether these local lockdowns can succeed, because all government policy now is based on the idea of not having to return to the sledgehammer option of a national lockdown. The early signs in Leicester are kind of mildly promising. Certainly, even if the number of new cases in Leicester are coming down quite slowly, it doesn't appear to be that the virus is spreading from Leicester to other cities in the East Midlands, which is encouraging. And so I think this is the question whether these localised approaches can work, because a second national lockdown would be devastating economically, I think devastating for national morale. And the question is whether doing this more targeted approach can succeed. I think if it is going to succeed, you probably will need to up testing again. So that, for example, everyone who is coming into contact with lots of members of the public on a regular basis as part of their job is being tested to make sure that they are not passing on the virus, whether that be once a week or something like that.
Now, Fraser, we're all trying to learn to live with the virus, and key to that is areas that are not locked down, reducing the chance of transmission. And something that keeps coming up and has been in several reports over the weekend is face masks. In Scotland, they're already mandatory in shops. There have been some suggestions they could be made mandatory here. Michael Gove suggested that the government would be reluctant to do this on Sunday. Robert Buckland suggested they might be keen to do it this morning. And we've now heard from the Prime Minister. Here's what he had to say.
What we've said for a while now is that we do think that masks have a great deal of value. Obviously, they're mandatory on public transport, on the tube, but they have a great deal of value in confined spaces where you're meeting, you're coming into contact with people you don't normally meet.
Before we discuss that development, let's rewind the hands of time to when Jenny Harris, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, mentioned in a conversation with the Prime Minister that actually it could be quite a bad idea to wear a face mask in public. That was on the 11th of March.
Tell us about the value of wearing face masks. You see face masks around places. Is there any point to that?
If a healthcare professional hasn't advised you to wear a face mask, it's usually quite a bad idea. People tend to leave them on. They contaminate the face mask and then wipe it over something. So it's really not a good idea and doesn't help.
Fraser, would you welcome a change in the mask guidance? And what do you think is behind it? Is there compelling new evidence?
Well, the funny thing is there have been no new studies done about the efficacy of face masks. What there has been is new interpretations of existing old evidence. Now, we heard there Jenny Harris when she was talking on the 11th of March. She wasn't just saying that there was no evidence that wearing face masks in public was useless. She was positing as unscientific suggestions to the contrary. Now, back then, there were companies who were advertising face masks, and they were told by the Advertising Standards Agency to take the adverts down because they were obvious nonsense. You can't be hawking this fake idea. In the space of a few weeks, we've gone from adverts of face masks being banned to the government seriously thinking of making them compulsory. Without any scientific breakthrough, what has changed is the debate. Now, of course, you can get different studies that place various ways. There's a study in The Lancet about face masks, which has been critiqued quite effectively by the Oxford Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine. But I think what politically is at the heart of this is an idea that if you do say to people, please wear a face mask, you can get the economy going quicker. You give them extra confidence to go in there. They're not as worried about the virus. But I'm not so sure about that, because the question people are asking is fundamentally, how much of a risk is there? How much of the virus is there out there? We know the figures. The Office for National Statistics told us last week that 2 weeks ago, one in every 2,000 people in Britain had the coronavirus. Now it's closer to one in every 4,000. by the time the next figures come out on Thursday, it wouldn't surprise me if that's gone down to 1 in every 5,000 or 6,000. That's your chances of meeting somebody with it. Your chances of catching it are even smaller. And given that, again, according to the ONS, the majority of cases are asymptomatic, the chances of you actually getting seriously ill from it are smaller still. So you can see why Jenny Harris did not think face masks were that much of a practical use. But rather than talk about these figures, the government never did this. If you want to Google and find out how many people are being tested positive a day in my area, it's very difficult to get data or a feeling for how big the virus is out there. But if you see everybody wearing face masks, there is a risk that that site says to people, sends a message, the virus is still out there. Going out is such a risk that you can't so much as go into a shop and buy a pint of milk without having to wear a face mask. So there is a risk that rather than giving people more confidence, trying to make face masks mandatory might make people worry and think the virus is far more prevalent than it actually is.
James, isn't the opposite also possible? Because the government thinking seems to be that because people are already very worried about coronavirus, we keep seeing there's public hesitance every time the government unwinds more lockdown easing. Actually, a mask provides comfort to people to make them think they have some type of protection, however justified it is in science or not, to make them think it's okay to leave the house and get back to some form of normality.
Oh, it was very interesting this morning when Robert Buckland was talking about it on the Today programme. He started talking about the confidence they gave people, far more than the medical benefits of it. Now, so far, I don't think there's any study suggesting that they are actively harmful. And so I think something that might reduce the spread and might also make more people prepared to go out could be a good thing. I must admit, I do get uncomfortable, though, with the idea of a state constantly ordering us to do things. I think it is a weird sign of a society we've become, but the idea that this might be left up to us, you know, it was a matter of kind of good manners, as Michael Gove, I think, said on Mar on Sunday. I never thought of myself as particularly libertarian. Now, I always used to chuckle when I lived in America. There was a big sign when you drove across the state boundary from Washington, D.C. to Virginia. And it said, buckle up, Virginia. It's a law we can live with. And I used to laugh at this idea. But I have become, I must admit, slightly more irritated at government announcements telling me what and when to do where. But I have to say, on face masks, there is clearly something needs to happen to get Britain back to something closer to normality, because you come into London and it really does not feel like a normal working day. The footfall is still massively down. I think the initial signs are, I was in a restaurant on Friday evening, talked to the people running it, it's not full, they are still struggling.
Are they still to fill tables even?
Yeah, it was definitely not full. Mm. And I think a lot of people are backing out at the last minute. They find that someone in their party doesn't want to go. There clearly something needs to happen. Now look, there are obviously some practical problems. I struggle to see how you would eat dinner wearing a face mask. But I think on the face mask, the other thing which is, I think, driving this is partly Scotland. Nicola Sturgeon is trying to draw as many points of difference with the UK government as possible. And face masks is one of the ones that she's chosen. I think the government here are now worrying about that. And I think that because they see that face masks can't make the situation worse, I think they are moving towards now. I instinctively share the sense that just because something can't make the situation worse, making it compulsory sounds like a rather dramatic leap.
Especially, but by the way, if there's no scientific basis for it. I mean, seatbelts save lives. Nobody denies that. You will not find a seatbelt sceptic saying that
Johnson in this whole day.
Well,
we all used to rattle around like peas in the back of a
Yeah, what was he saying? Yeah, he said when he was a child, they'd rattle around the car like beans in a rattle. That was his analogy, and no harm it did me. Right, but he wouldn't seriously say that wearing a seatbelt does not substantially increase your chances of surviving a car crash. But when you will not find scientists saying that there is a solid, demonstrable case that wearing face masks in shop will make a meaningful difference, or the best they can say is the evidence suggests that it might help.
Isn't there a German study that shows that the places where people have worn face masks have had a lower rate of spread of the virus?
Right, but then there is various coincidence and correlation. And for every study saying that face masks, like the Lancet study, saying, look, face masks make a big difference, you will find that people like, for example, the Oxford study saying, actually, look at the small print of all of these studies it referenced, and the evidence is nowhere near as strong. Right at the beginning of this virus, Dr. John Lee wrote a piece for The Spectator where he looked and surveyed the things about face masks. This is not a new debate. People have been discussing face masks for months, years. I mean, there's a big culture in Asia where you wear face masks in a way that you don't here. And it's been discussed so many times. And Dr. Lee's conclusion was that if the government wants to make them compulsory, obviously they must have a good grounds for that, so it should surely be easy for the government to point us to the study which proves, rather than saying it's likely, which proves that face masks make a meaningful difference. Now, what we're talking about, James, is the government thinking, actually, no, this scientific threshold doesn't really matter. For whatever reason, we don't want to be upstaged by the Scots or whatever, so let's make them compulsory. Now, I think that there is an important question here about the extent of government levers of control over a society, the extent to which we are trusted to use our common sense. Right from the offset, I think that had lockdown not been mandatory, the trajectory of coronavirus would have been exactly, or not exactly, but almost exactly the same, because people would have taken action on their own accord. If you look at the mobility data, I think something like half of the reduction in mobility had already happened before lockdown. People, if trusted, can use their common sense in the way that will minimise the spread of the virus. And I think there is a real concern here that when you're getting groups like Liberty, who are supposed to promote civil liberties, are being very, very silent in this epidemic, who is going to defend these things? Who's going to make sure that the government does not overreach, or rather that government advice is going to follow scientific advice rather than what they think is simply politically expedient?
Now, finally, the government wants to start talking about Brexit again, it seems. We had Michael Gove over the weekend announcing a series of new funding to get ports ready and prepare the borders. James, is this because we don't yet have a deal and the government must look serious? Or is this in response to Liz Truss writing a letter that was later leaked, suggesting that there are going to be problems at the borders? What's behind the latest announcement?
I think the first thing to say is, even if there is a deal between the UK and the EU, that kind of fabled Canada-style deal, there is still going to be massive changes at the borders that businesses and individuals need to get ready for, and perhaps most importantly, the state needs to get ready for. That is one big reason why they're doing it. I don't mean this should be seen as a commentary on the state of the Brexit talks, because even if Boris Johnson gets the exact deal that he says he wants, there is going to be changes at the border from the current situation. That's the first thing to note. I think the second thing is the government is behind in terms of urging businesses and individuals to get ready and its own preparations because of coronavirus. I think one of the government's views at the start of this year was we didn't need to extend the transition period because everyone knows that there is going to be changes. And in terms of the border, the difference between Canada and WTO in terms of the paperwork is not that great. And so everyone should get on with getting ready. But obviously that message has been drowned out because government messaging in the last few months in terms of kind of public information has been about lockdown, test and trace, potentially now face masks. And so I think there is a kind of now a desire to get back to doing that. I think there is also this question of, you know, you actually have to physically build this infrastructure. You know, you are going to need this lorry park in Kent. You are going to need all these other things. And I think the government now knows that, you know, it needs to crack on with this. Otherwise, it's going to be caught late. And I mean, the one thing that the government cannot take right now is another blow to its reputation for competence. And if there is major disruption at the borders next year because of Brexit, I think that would cause an even worse political problem for the government now than it would have done before, because obviously coronavirus has shone a spotlight on how well and effectively the British state functions.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening. And while we have you here, we have an event on Thursday night, and it's a rather special event. It's an online event, as is the way these days. But not only do you get the usual Coffee House Shots panel, the event, which is looking at coronavirus and the lessons that we have learnt, will have the special guest appearance of Andrew Neil. He'll be joining us remotely. So do tune in to see him. Tickets are £5 and you can get them at www.spectator.co.uk/lessons.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.